This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. The White House says that President Donald Trump was never briefed on intelligence that Russia had put a bounty on U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan because there wasn't corroborating evidence. But former intelligence officials say that presidents are routinely informed about intelligence even when it's not definitively confirmed. They say it strains to think that Mr. Trump wouldn't have been told of something so important, whether corroborated or not. Intelligence that may be on shaky ground today may foreshadow tomorrow's calamity. So briefers are expected to ensure presidents have the fullest possible picture to prepare for something that may soon require full attention. The U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to hear a bid by President Trump's administration to avoid disclosing to the House Judiciary Committee grand jury materials related to former special counsel Robert Mueller's report documenting Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. But the justices will not hear arguments until its next term, which starts in October, meaning the dispute is unlikely to be resolved before the November 3rd election. Gerald Nadler, the chairman of the Democratic-led House Judiciary Committee, said that he was disappointed by the court's decision, but was confident the Democrats would prevail. In March of 2019, Mueller submitted his reports to U.S. Attorney General William Barr after a 22-month investigation that detailed Russian hacking as well as propaganda efforts to boost Mr. Trump's candidacy, as well as multiple contacts between Mr. Trump's campaign and Moscow. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. The number of COVID-19-related deaths worldwide jumped by nearly 5,000 within a 24-hour period, taking the total to more than 520,000. In the United States, that figure's changed slightly with more than 128,000 deaths. The number of infections continued to surge around the world and in the U.S. with more than 10.8 million confirmed infections globally and more than 2.7 million in the U.S. A combined 25,000 new confirmed coronavirus cases in just four U.S. states fueled a surge as the country heads into the July 4th holiday weekend. The states of Arizona, California, Florida, and Texas reported the figures Thursday. The U.S. as a whole reported more than 50,000 new cases within a 24-hour period, according to a tally kept by Johns Hopkins University. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is urging officials to maintain maximum alert against the coronavirus pandemic, as he criticized unspecified complacencies in the country's antivirus campaign. Despite the warning, state media says that Kim reaffirmed government claims that there hasn't been a single case of COVID-19 in North Korea. The North's claim of being free of the coronavirus has been questioned by outside experts, who say a major outbreak in the country could possibly have dire consequences because of its chronic lack of medical supplies and poor healthcare infrastructure. The country has shut down nearly all cross-border traffic and banned tourists who block the virus. The U.S. economy just posted its largest single-month job gain. At the same time, the unemployment rate sits at one of its worst points since the Great Depression, as Republicans and Democrats fight to spin Thursday's jobs numbers to their advantage. Both sides face tremendous political risk on a defending issue and defining issue heading into the presidential election. Former Vice President Joe Biden seized on the growing threat presented by the coronavirus after the better-than-expected numbers were released. U.S. President Donald Trump claimed a major economic victory and downplayed the health threat, even as an explosion of new infections threatens to stall or even reverse some of the economic progress. Their dueling visions establish a new frame for the high-stakes debate ahead. The number of fires in Brazil's Amazon rainforest rose 20% in June to a 13-year high for the month. Government data showed July 1st as researchers worry about what it could signal, a repeat of last year's surge in forest fires. Health experts also fear the smoke that often blankets the region during the dry season.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Friday, July 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The ruling coalition in the DRC is not on the brink of collapse.
This coalition, like a baby, is facing some trouble, but I can give you assurance that until now, the FCC on one side and the cash on the other side wants to work together.
Zambia's opposition parties are talking alliances ahead of the 2021 general election. Guinea-Bissau continues in the political quagmire. Teenage pregnancy on the rise in Kenya during COVID-19. And an expelled Liberia deputy minister says her expulsion is politically motivated.
Most time when you find strong women in Africa, the men tend to get very jittery and hysterical. And I want to believe that the men in the party are very, very hysterical. But all of the allegations are not true.
Jemima Wolo-Colley is the former Deputy Commerce Minister for Small Business Administration. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, a spokesperson for President Félix Tshisekedi says the ruling coalition of former President Joseph Kabila's FCC and President Tshisekedi's cash alliance is not falling apart. Abraham Lukabuanga says while the coalition is experiencing some difficulties, it is now on the brink of collapse. Thanks to the cooperation between President Tshisekedi and former President Kabila. The disagreement began last week after Justice Minister Celestin Tunda, an ally of Mr. Kabila, was arrested briefly and released after he proposed that his ministry be given more control over criminal prosecutions. The Roman Catholic Archbishop of Kinshasa said earlier this week that the coalition had lost its purpose. Lukabuanga says political leaders in the DRC today do not want to repeat the same mistakes that have torn the country apart since independence.
This coalition, like a baby, is facing some trouble, but I can give you assurance that until now, the FCC on one side and the cash on the other side wants to work together. Few things happened that could have broke the confidence. Things such as initiatives being most of the time taken by the FCC without consulting the cash has led to less confidence, you know, between the two partners. But hopefully, since President Félix Tshisekedi still has a good relationship with the former president, Mr. Joseph Kabila, their relationship is helping the coalition to remain alive.
So, Abraham, what can you tell us about exactly what led to the arrest of Justice Minister Celestin Tunda?
From what we've heard is he has sent a letter to the parliament without the entire government being aware of it. In Congolese law, before a project that has been introduced to the parliament go forward, the government has also to send his observations, and those observations were not made at all.
We spoke with someone from former President Kabila's FCC, and he seems to be suggesting that the Kabila side of the coalition is telling President Tshisekedi's catch to accept the proposals that are being made. Otherwise, the current union or coalition will move from being a coalition to cohabitation.
Actually, we've heard those kind of threats, but I will go back to what the president said during his speech for the 60th anniversary of our independence. He went back to the history, saying that this situation, we had faced this kind of situation a couple of years ago. And that situation leads to a major crisis that brought Congo into a real bad shape. So we don't have to make the same mistakes which has been made during the 60 years. We have to have more wisdom to make sure that when we are giving a proposal of law, that proposal of law must have one goal. The main goal is bring Congo to prosperity, bring Congo to more peace, bring Congo to development, not a project of law that is going to hurt people, that is going to diminish, you know, liberty of people.
What is President Tshisekedi's response to the Belgian king's apology to the people of the Congo because of the way Belgium treated the people of Congo?
Actually, we don't have an official response yet, but I can tell you this, it's going to be for sure a positive response, knowing that President Tshisekedi lives more than 20 years also in Belgium. He used to call Belgium his other Congo. So he has good ties with Belgium. This recognition of slavery before, which was almost like a slavery time during the colonization, recognizing that things were bad, people were killed, people were mistreated, is a really good thing that can lead us into another way, which will be reparations. Not only this kind of bad situation, but we do have also things that belongs to the Congo, such as cultural things, masks and other things, that big symbols of Congolese culture that are still in the Tervuren Museum in Belgium. So I think this opens door to an official request of getting all those treasures back in the Congo.
Abraham Luakabuanga is a spokesperson for DRC President Felix Tshisekedi. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kinshasa. The leader of Zambia's opposition All People's Congress, ABC Party, says the group welcomes calls for an opposition alliance ahead of next year's general election. Nelson Umsane also calls on all opposition leaders to have an open mind during negotiations to decide the alliance's standard bearer to challenge incumbent President Edgar Lungu. Analysts say a failure of the opposition to unite and choose a single candidate might enable the ruling party to win next year's elections. But Nese Msani tells viewers Peter Clotty that it is too early to debate who should be the alliance's standard bearer.
We are not closed to the idea of a political alliance. But what we are saying as All People's Congress, APC, is that those who are calling for an alliance, our fellow opposition political parties, they themselves should be ready to be led by other leaders. It makes sense to be in an alliance, but those who are calling for an opposition alliance should be ready to support other leaders.
What criteria do you think should be implemented in the first phase in order to ensure that the alliance holds for the election?
First, we are saying that those who are coming to the alliance must come with no preconceived agenda of hijacking the grouping, or that themselves should see themselves leading the alliance as flag bearers. We are saying that itself will not work. But we are happy to be in an alliance in which leaders themselves in the alliance will be given an opportunity to choose and elect a flag bearer, and will not accept to be in an alliance in which a political party member of that alliance wants to use its political party name as a bearer of the flag bearer of the alliance. So all we are saying that if indeed there is this conviction and agreement for an alliance, then all of us should come with open minds and being ready to be led by any of the leaders of the various political parties in the opposition. Thank you.
Well, Nelson, some are suggesting that although a good idea, the biggest opposition party should lead the alliance, because in any case, if there's a second round, all the other opposition parties would have to give way or support the main opposition party to challenge the incumbent. What do you say to that assertion?
At this stage, I think it's a little bit premature to suggest or to assume that the bigger opposition political party should straight away assume the mantra of leadership of that alliance. I think everybody should earn it. Every leader should earn it by convincing other leaders that he has what it takes to be a president of this country. Okay, so we think that there must be a basis of claiming leadership. Yes, if your party feels you are the best, but we have to put your leadership to test. Look, a lot of things have gone horribly wrong in this country, and we cannot afford to slip. We cannot afford to miss an opportunity to fix the damage that has been done to this country because of poor leadership. So we are not close to all options on the table, but we will look at every option with its own merits.
Nelson Msani is the leader of Zambia's opposition People's Congress Party. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty. In Liberia, a member of the ruling Congress for Democratic Change says allegations resulting in her expulsion from the party are pure lies. This week, President George Weah dismissed Jemima Wolokoli as Deputy Commerce Minister for Small Business Administration. The party's executive committee then expelled her, accusing her of fraud, extortion, corruption, and involvement in a fake loan scheme. Now, Wolokoli says her expulsion is politically motivated and a result of jittery men within the ruling CDC, who, she said, are always afraid of strong women. She accused the party of sexism and tribalism.
I'm not going to take it to be serious because I wasn't consulted. The owner wrote the document and sent it to the various station and put it on. That's what it did. So I am still a founding member of the mighty Congress for Democratic Change.
The party said that you were expelled after being found guilty of fraud, extortion, corruption, and involvement in fake loan scheme. Did you do all of these?
No, Mr. Bhatti, it's a pure lie. You know, most time when you find strong women in Africa, they men tend to get very jittery and hysterical. And I want to believe that the men in the party are very, very hysterical. But all of the allegations are not true. I said to them, if this is what you think about me, take me to court. But I will not accept you getting on the international media or local media and just tarnishing my good reputation that I've built over the years. And everybody who knows Jemima Wolokoli know that she stands for something. And she does not just fall for anything. And never in my life have I been involved in corruption or all of the allegations that he made against me.
Madam Wolokoli, you have been quoted as saying that if your dismissal was due to your stance exposing the wrongdoings in the ruling coalition, then you have no regrets. What are those wrongs within the ruling Congress for Democratic Change coalition that you refer to?
There are so many, but I will just name just a few. Most time when they have the primary, right, and you having to win the primary, normally they will tell you to step aside. Step aside and somebody else is going to take your place and then go for the election. And I said to them, this is totally wrong. We have to stop that. We cannot continue to do the things that we did years ago. We have to stop it. If someone wins the primary, let that person be able to go and run for that vacancy. You are not going to be the person to be choosing who will go and who will not go. That's not democracy. Democracy must be practiced at the highest level. And if we cannot do that, then what do you call that? Our party is a party that everybody is afraid to say what is going on and it's too much in the party. Our chairman is from Lufa County. He's Loma. Then you have Pala, who has been supported by the chairman, he's Kisi. Then you have Jefferson Kochi, who is also Kisi, has been supported by Maluma Malu. I see tribalism right there.
Do you suspect politics played a role in your expulsion?
Yes, a whole lot. When I declared that I wanted to run, they asked me not to run. Some members within the party told me, look, do not run because we have already chosen Fala. And it's Fala that we're going to carry. And I said, no, if my president is... He's the chief feminist of Liberia, and he has always said that he's going to support women. He wanted more women in the Senate and in the House of Representatives. So I was encouraged to throw my hat in the race because you have one woman in the Senate, which is Yomli Kanga Lawrence. And that made them very angry. They said that, why did I come to say that I'm going to continue? I disobeyed the party. So they expelled me from the party. They didn't expel me because I'm corrupt. Everybody know who Jemima Wolokoli is and what she stands for. I've never been in corruption before and will never be in it.
So what are your plans now? Do you plan on joining another political party?
Well, like I said, I'm going to be discussing with my political advisors. And I also have to go back to the organization, Liberians in Support for Democratic Change, the largest auxiliary within CDC. I've got to go back to my people and discuss with them. And whatever they tell me to do, I shall obey.
Madam Wolokoli, thank you very much again. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you, Mr. Bhatti. It's been a pleasure also.
Jemima Wolokoli is Liberia's former Deputy Commerce Minister for Small Business Administration. She was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, July 3rd. On Wednesday this week, the United Nations Security Council expressed concern at the ongoing crisis in Guinea-Bissau and called on security forces there not to interfere in the political process. The statement came one day after the country's parliament met for the first time since a political crisis over who won December's presidential election launched the West African country into more months of political infighting. The president of the PAIGC party, Domingo Simões Pereira, whose party won last year's legislative elections, but who saw five members defect to attend this week's parliamentary session despite a party-wide boycott, tells Rekish Fryer that this week's parliamentary session did not meet legal standards.
It was completely out of the order because in our constitution, the parliament is the main legislative body. So if you don't comply with the procedures and the law, how you expect the institutions that you're supposed to control will comply? And I'll give you just two examples very clear. First thing is that for the commission, what we call the table of the ANP to be constituted, you need the president and two secretaries. The two secretaries were not there, so you don't have the table, you don't have the commission. If you don't have a commission, you cannot run the plenary. The second thing is that you cannot start by announcing that you have the quorum to start the meeting, and then you swear the newcomers of the public. So by doing that, you're aware that you are counting on people that were not sworn out. So, I mean, all of the procedure was a fake.
When they said they also voted on the program during that session, what was included in that program? Was it just the ministerial list, or do you have the details of what exactly they voted to pass in the session?
No, they didn't talk about budget. They talked about the program. But nobody saw the program. Even the members of the parliament that were there that day that said that they approved the program, they didn't have a copy of that program. So it's like, since we have the quorum, since we are here, let's go ahead and approve a program.
Recently, Imbalo appointed a new director of the Agency of Management and Cooperation between Guinea-Bissau and Senegal, and that cooperation is tasked with administering the joint exploration zone along the shared border of the two countries. Given Macky Sall's support of Imbalo, what did you think about this appointing of a new head of this agency, and will that have repercussions? Who the new head is?
You know, I would not go to discuss the names. Names mean what they mean. You take X out, you put Y. That does not concern me. What really concerns me is the moment. Why now? The other guy was appointed less than a year before. He was appointed by Jean-Marie Vaz. Why you remove him today? What happened? What's happening? Because we know that he's a part of your coalition. This whole thing is not serious. Try to launch the oil exploitation during the time that you have in the election. You try to renegotiate the whole process. The country is not aware of what's going on. You announcing new discovery. Nobody knows what's happening on that sector. So thing of replacing the head of the agency is just another way of, you know, taking people's attention to something else, when the real deal should have been wait for a regular government to be a part of the process.
That was Domingo Simões Pereira, president of Guinea-Bissau's PAIGC party. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Lisbon, Portugal. As Kenya struggles to curb the spread of the coronavirus, the East African country is facing another outbreak, teenage pregnancy. During 3 months of lockdown, 150,000 teenage girls became pregnant, a 40% increase in the monthly average. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
45-year-old Tabitha Mukui lives in a remote village in Machakos County, eastern Kenya. Her teenage daughter is one of 150,000 young girls that government officials say have become pregnant since Kenya announced its first COVID-19 case in March and went on lockdown. The mother of seven discovered the pregnancy just last week after her daughter wore a sweater for many days. She says, "I asked her to remove her sweater, and she removed the sweater.
I looked at her and saw that she was pregnant. I felt so angry inside, but I did not beat her. I did not yell at her. Rafael Chengo is the local chief in the area. He says in 1 year, we will get one or two cases of teenage pregnancy. The cases that I have received this time around, since the school closed, the cases have doubled. In these 3 months, I have received and directly dealt with 4 cases. The town of Matu Vision Center provides safety for vulnerable boys and girls. John Gatuku of the center says they have received 41 cases since March, 18 of them girls.
Defilement cases was a major factor there among the group. We have also 3 cases of orphaned children, and the rest of the group to seek protection. We found that they are not safe in places where they used to reside before.
Machakos County officials say they recorded 4,000 cases in the past 3 months. Kate Maina Voli, County Director for Women's Rights Group Plan International in Kenya, says the COVID-19 pandemic is taking away the gains made by empowering girls.
It's shone a light on the ugly face of gender-based violence and the atrocities that are committed on girls in Kenya. It has shone a light on the gender disparities, and we now run the risk of eroding all the gains we've had in terms of advancing equality for girls.
As for Mukui, she says she has accepted the situation with her daughter and is ready to support her when she's ready to finish her education. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Matu, Kenya.
Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omali in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with basketball. The Federation of International Basketball Association African Executive Director Alfonso Biel says the inaugural Basketball African League has come to transform the landscape of basketball on the continent of Africa, although the start date is yet to be confirmed. The inaugural Basketball African League was postponed following the COVID-19 outbreak. The former Cote d'Ivoire international player and coach believes African players have a lot of talent and skills which the league will help in fine-tuning. The Basketball African League is a partnership between FIBA and the National Basketball Association, NBA, and it aims to boost African basketball at different levels. In rugby news, former South African player Chile boy Raffaele has been handed a career-ending 8-year ban for doping some 18 months after testing positive for a banned substance. It is a second drugs ban for the 33-year-old hooker, who served a 2-year suspension between 2014 and 2016 following a positive out-of-competition test while at the French club Toulouse. His lawyer Hendrik Hugo told local media that there were good grounds to appeal the latest ban. And now to athletics, where Athletics Kenya President Jack Tuwei wants the country's sports ministry to negotiate with their counterparts in the European Union to ensure Kenyan athletes take part in the Diamond League races in Europe. Kenya is among the countries that are yet to be cleared to travel into Schengen states when the European Union opens its borders on July the 1st. The borders were closed due to the coronavirus pandemic. Mr. Jack Tuwei said that the events in Europe are the only opening available for athletes who have lost massive earnings to make some money. And on to some football news. Inter Milan have signed Morocco international Ashraf Hakimi from Real Madrid, the two clubs announced on Thursday. Inter will pay Madrid 40 million euros for the fullback, with a further 5 million euros due in variable, according to reports in Italy. The 21-year-old signed a 5-year contract with Antonio Conte's side. And Simba SC have clinched the Tanzania Premier League title with 6 matches to spare after Sunday's barren draw away to Tanzania Prisons FC in Mbeya gave them an unassailable 19-point lead over second-placed Young Africans. The 2019-2020 crown is Simba's 3 in a row and their 21st in history, and it hands them another chance of representing the East African country in next year's Toto CAF Champions League. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, July 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.